At the end of yesterday's show, we had a call from Elaine in Strand, an emotional call. Her late husband depended on an oxygen machine, and she was very concerned about people like him who might depend on medical equipment at home during the load shedding. I'm joined on the line by MEC for Community Safety, Alan Windy. He's also the DA Premier candidate, of course, for the Western Cape. Alan, thanks so much for coming on the show this afternoon.
Only a pleasure.
So what plans are in place for people who are relying on medical equipment at home?
Okay, so, I mean, I want to say that they're not really any plans in place. Obviously, from a government point of view, our hospitals have all got the generators in place, and they all set up and they get tested regularly, and we've got the diesel in place, etc. Even some of our own small clinics may not have. And then what we've had to do is make sure that equipped in the closest area to that clinic with proper refrigeration facilities. But other than that, it's very, very difficult. And this, you know, just another one of those problems that we are facing now with load shedding. So you've got the health problem that it gets right now, where people need certain, machinery that are electrical, or certain mechanisms that are electrical for health reasons. And the same thing happening across all of our businesses. It is really, really hectic. And that's why yesterday I said that I believe that this should be declared a disaster, because then in a disaster state, you're allowed to, as governments, do different things. So that should happen at a national level. At a provincial level, we will be discussing next week on what we need to be doing differently. Because we have had a plan in place up until now, where we've got our own targets of reaching certain amounts of megawatts using green energy, with the energy game changer. But with the kind of levels of load shedding now, we've been able to avert it up until now. When the country's gone into stage one, we've at least kept the lights on in the Western Cape. But now at 3 and 4, it's not possible. And I mean, really, it is putting such pressure on the whole of society. And of course, I mean, really, when it comes to life threatening, then decisions have to be made to what do you do at that stage? You know, do you move someone to a different area? But these are the kind of things that we need to have discussions on. I'm also having discussions around safety, because criminology or crime starts to jump up when certain areas are dark. So we also doing the same thing. We're having a look at statistics and saying, well, in some of our red zones, should we not change the schedule of load shedding in some of the red zones? This is a big, big issue for us.
We are getting a lot of requests from listeners to try and stay on top of the load shedding so that they can make their own contingency plans. Where is the best place for people to get updates? And for them, I just want to remind listeners, it's on a 4-day rotation schedule. Am I right, Alan?
Correct. So the best is at the, and obviously most people are probably in the city, but your local authority, your local municipality is load shedding on their website. That is the best. I also sit on an advisory that comes through from Eskom. Sometimes those things also change, especially because of the state that we're in at the moment. So you suddenly see them moving from, level 3 to level 4. But then all I can say is just keep that messaging, keep looking at those websites. And thank radio stations and social media, because that also seems to be quite sort of up to date when these changes do come.
We have another question from a listener who has the same kind of concerns as Elaine, just asking why the city is not providing a stage 5 to 8 possible load shedding schedule, because obviously these people also depend on medical equipment that relies on battery power, and maybe there are ways that they can conserve that battery power.
I don't know the answer to you, because I'm not sure what the full impact would be on getting to sort of stage 6 and 7. But it's a question that I'll definitely take into our next meeting. Can we start building some clarity? Because that's actually what people need. One of the discussions we're going to have with business next week is to say, how do we have a look at maybe shifting around some hours of trade, etc., hours of operation? Our manufacturing sector is taking huge pounding. you know, the slow growth in the economy, it really is, that's why I say this should be declared a disaster. For me, what I really want to do in the next week is say, how do we find, I'm sure you know that we've got a court case at the moment at a national level on allowing municipalities to
access IPPs.
IPPs up to 10 megawatts. But we already have a system that says 1 megawatt. So what I want to do next week is, how do we try and ramp up 1 megawatt investment? What kind of funding is available for it? What is the buyback that we can? And then maybe some people can make some business decisions. Because really, what we do know is this is going to be here for a while. So we really need to get our system into as better or the best space we can get it from a risk mitigation point of view, and that's getting as many megawatts back into the system as quickly as possible.
Alan, I know it's province making plans, it's a national grid, but why is there only planning for red zones now when we've known about the fact that there's going to be load shedding for a while?
Are you talking about the crime red zones?
Yeah. Why does it feel like in many areas we're scrambling to kind of deal with the situation?
Well, I raised this last time with General Tilo when we had the load shedding about a month ago. I've only been the NEC for community safety since November, so it's the first time I've come across it. And so I was sort of out there on walking the streets and then seeing the impact of load shedding, came straight back to the office, interrogated the opportunity of maybe using the information. Now, that's always not that easy to say, because data and statistics stats are not always the easiest thing to get to. So they're busy doing a study to see if it has got an increase or spike. And I don't have that data back with me yet, but you know, straight away it says to me that there is, you know, it makes sense when people on the ground are complaining. So we don't even have this that we've asked for it, that we actually overlay to see, was there a difference in price levels in our red zones?
Unfortunately, we're going to have to end that call. I know the audio was bad, but those were important questions that we had to ask. So my apologies for being late for the news with Chanel September.
This is Eyewitness News.
Protests hit Lavender Hill and Parkwood, and police make breakthrough in Khayelitsha double murder case. Good evening, I'm Chanel September. Protests underway in both Parkwood and Lavender Hill. Prince George Drive between Dick Burton and Deval Road has since been closed to traffic. Disgruntled residents took to the streets for a second day today, burning tyres. Community leader Paul Phillips says residents gathered in front of Human Settlements MEC Bonginkosi Marikizela's office yesterday to raise their concerns, but were not satisfied with the response.
The flare-up has started again in Parkwood, Lavender Hill, Kevda. The M5 has been shut down, been closed down because of the demands of our people to condone violent protests, but all evidence has been exhausted.
The MEC says the matter is being attended to. Meanwhile, the city's Wayne Dyson says officers are currently on the scene.
Prince George Drive is once again the scene of what appears to be protest action, as groups of people set tyres alight and block the roads. The current areas that are affected are the intersections at Joe Marks Boulevard and PG Drive. The road is closed between 14th Avenue and Military Road, and Hyde Road and PG Drive, Prince George Drive.
At the same time, earlier today, supporters of housing rights group Reclaim the City protested at the Rondebosch Golf Course in an attempt to highlight the need for land for affordable housing. The organization says Rondebosch Golf Course can be used to house thousands of people. The protest was also part of the group's Human Rights Day commemorations. Jason Felix reports.
Reclaim the City supporters entered the Rondebosch Golf Course through a back gate as the main gate was closed. According to one of the group's leaders, Nkosi Kona Swartboy, the golf course can house up to 2,000 families. Social housing has been a contentious issue in the city as the demand for houses grow daily. The city has not responded to a request for comment as yet. It has, however, made several commitments to release public land for housing. Jason Felix, Eyewitness News.
Staying with housing-related matters, a Western Cape High Court judge has found national government violated the rights of District 6 land claimants by failing to provide restitution. The District 6 Working Committee, on behalf of hundreds of people who lodged land claims,